Here we go. John Curley, Sherry Ellicker Show. Thanks, everybody, for being along for the ride. You write to us. That's good. Teeny Tiny Lady in the Pickle Jar. Who? Where is she, Jacob? Her little stool is empty. Where is she?
You know, I think some of her experiences with Sherry have made her less motivated to show up on time.
Oh, okay. It's my fault. It's my fault she has no time management.
Well, no, she also, I heard she she feels self-conscious about the mustache now, so.
Yeah, it's, you wanted her to perm her mustache.
Got me in the yeah!
Sorry. Not sorry.
Now it's just come to the surface. It's so, it used to be subtle. There was this sort of underlying current of dislike that you had for her. Bigger than that, Sherry. You're a full-grown woman with giant hands. She lives in a jar.
It's a two-way street, and she is equal in her disdain for me.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Oh, she's back. Okay.
Yeah.
She's back. See? Okay. All right. Sunday night, there's a bar over in University near the UW. It's, I don't think it's a bar because you don't, I think you can, you can be underage and be in there. Right. Isn't it kind of a, it's like,
I think it might be a restaurant that, yeah, you can, but that they, yeah, they serve alcohol. So you can maybe be in there, but yeah, presumably they're still IDing people.
Flowers Bar and Restaurant.
Got it. So it's a place to kind of hang out. It's not your sort of typical University of Washington UW bar. And you get younger people in there and other folks in there. I was talking to a couple of cops that were on that call on that Sunday. So what happened was that it's just two, it's no, these guys were not college students. It was kind of two gangbangers went out there, got into a fight, and then ended up shooting at one another. And then they hit four people or something. Bystanders were in the mix outside at 2 in the morning when the bar let out.
Yeah, it was actually four UW students.
Four injured, right?
Yeah, one of them is still in the hospital. He's in satisfactory condition. The other three were treated and released. But yeah, this looks like it was collateral damage. There was a fight that went on. Shots were fired. They got shot as a result. They were not involved in the altercation.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's the same most of the time. And it's the weirdest part of the stories that they cover is, oh, it's gun violence, gun violence, gun violence. It's a very small section of the community shooting and killing one another. In most cases, the shooter is black. In most cases, the victim is black. That's the case. You know, I'm assuming a lot of times these cases are not solved because nobody wants to talk to the police because you don't want to rat somebody out because the word gets back that you ratted somebody out. Next thing you know, you're going to get shot.
Yeah, so snitches get stitches.
It is. Thank you, Sherry. So yeah, that's what you get. So this idea of like it's you know rampant, and we got to do something about the guns, and if we do something about the guns, then we're going to solve this problem. It's not about the guns. It's a very small group of people in the community that are the ones shooting, and then same being shot. So you think like if you had like I don't know 300 and some shootings or something, and I don't know how many deaths they've had in Seattle. If it was a white guy shooting a black guy, it'd be a totally different thing. It wouldn't be about gun violence. It would be about hate crimes. It would be about racism and all this other stuff. But when you change the color of the shooter and they change the color of the victim, and just make them both black, then no one talks about any of that. There's a group, and I support this group. I'd seen them speak at an event in New York a couple of years ago, and it was Mothers Against Gun Violence, Voices of Black Mothers. There was a woman that was speaking, older woman, Sylvia something or other. She's in her 70s. She's part of the Woodson Foundation, and she was talking about how people just do nothing. So politicians use their children, their dead children, and activists use their dead children, and nobody cares about their kids, and it's never the issue. Of what's happening in the community. So these moms that are Voices of Black Mothers United, they said it can't come from outside. It has to come from inside the neighborhood. And it's about working with police, about working with Boys and Girls Clubs. It's about working with intervention. teachers, about parents being involved. It has to be solved. Their whole thing is has to be solved from within the community. It's not some outside thing that's going to solve this, because it's their kid, their 15-year-old, shooting someone else's mom's 17-year-old, and they're on the same block or separated by a couple of streets. That's the story. But you look at the Seattle Times, it's this whole idea that we don't know how to get a hold of it. We don't know how to solve it. You get Dal Constantine's going to spend $1 million or $2 million or whatever this. We could do all this gun violence. It's these moms are really trying to make some sort of headway on this thing. They're all across the United States. They're in Virginia, Maryland, Baltimore, New York. They're in California. And it's a small group of moms that have all known in the heartache. The woman told the story about arriving just in time to watch her son take her last breath there on the ground, you know, just covered in blood. And remove social economics, remove color, remove everything. But just think of it, that's your kid. That's your baby, right? That and being held back by the police. Like the mom talked about trying to throw herself on top of her son to try to help somehow, to hug him one more time or feel the warmth that was still in his body. And he'd already passed. It was heartbreaking, heartbreaking. And no one knows their names. Nobody cares, because they weren't killed by the person that can be exploited, right? It's not a cop. It's not a white guy. It's just someone else that this kid knew or might not have known or had some beef against. It's just tragic. And these moms are all just silent victims of this whole thing.
And the ages of these kids is what is really shocking. I mean, some of them are 14, 13 years old. I mean, and the fact that they're carrying guns in the first place is shocking and terrible. But that they're killing each other at such a high rate is really, you know,
if I were a kid living in a situation where these shootings are occurring and I was 14 years old, I'm sorry, I would carry a gun. That sounds horrible, but you're going to run into somebody who has one, and it was in Memphis, right? Scrawled across this wall, this, and it's been there for about 15 years, kill or be killed. Somebody had put this graffiti on this wall 15 years ago, and still the crime and still the shooting, and it's still happening over and over and over again. But if I were a kid and I were living in one of those neighborhoods, I don't know, you just think to yourself, if you don't have a gun?
I think that's how demented, right? I mean, you have to for protection, but I think most of these kids join gangs for protection, right? I mean, if you're out there and, you know, the neighborhood has rival gangs and you're not part of it, there's going to be a lot of recruitment to try to get you into a gang. And then you're going to have to do an initiation. And that means you're going to have to prove yourself to the gang. And then once you cross over that threshold into whatever that is, there's no turning back. There's no real shame in going to prison, because a lot of these gangs that are on the street are run by people in prison. And some gangs, it's a requirement. It's like part of your, you know, prerequisite to get into a gang. You have to have been in prison. So that's not really a deterrent. It's like, what if I get caught? I'll go to prison. That's okay. So the whole system, I mean, the whole thing is so upsetting because there's no way to unravel it or start to fix it. How do you do it? I mean, you have these kids. Some of these kids come from homes where they have no supervision. They don't have enough to eat, so they join a gang because it's their family. I mean, that's common knowledge. That's how they do it. But it's the UW president put out a statement, and what she said was that gun violence is a public health crisis, and that she's working, the university is working with the city of Seattle and the Seattle Police Department to address root causes behind the increase in personal and property crime in the university district. Now, how are they doing that? How do they deal with the root causes? Are they going to go single-handedly and help with poverty and drug addiction and unemployment and all of
and
that?
Broken families and,
right.
and crappy schools. Here's one for you. A study that was done, Harvard did this study, and what they found was where they had school choice. So they looked at the numbers prior to school choice in North Carolina, and they found prior to the school choice coming in place, once school choice was in place, then they started looking at the numbers. If you have a school choice and the parent could send their kid to whatever school they wanted to go to, teen pregnancy in the black community dropped 10%. Children, they really are kids, and up to the age of 18 years old, going to prison dropped by 5%. And they said these numbers will continue to improve as parents are able to send their kids to a school. So then all of a sudden the kid has a better education. That school choice was done in North Carolina. The study that was done by Harvard and two other organizations looked at those numbers as well to see. So you would say to somebody like Dale Constantine, I have an idea. Rather than spending another $2 million on some sort of project or whatever to look at, you know, public health of this gun violence or taking the guns off the streets, would you want to support a movement that has been proven to work, which is you say to that parent, you could send your kid to a better school so that all of a sudden your kid starts to see that there's a future and they start to get grades and they start to find that somebody cares about them and they're in a better, more productive environment that they're spending their days in. Would, if you knew that those numbers would reduce teen pregnancy, if you knew those numbers would reduce kids going to prison, if you knew it would reduce gangs and gang shooting, would you support school choice? And the answer is absolutely no way. No way would they do that. No. They would stop that in an instant. Even if you said, these are pretty good numbers. Now, what are your numbers? You're going to spend $2 million. Are you going to start to see these numbers go down? Why not try that? Why not see if school choice and allowing a voucher program so that a mom and a dad or just a mom can send their kid to the school that they want to go to if you knew those numbers were effective? But they can't do that because no way they would. This teachers union would stop them and Dow wouldn't get any money and Bob Ferguson wouldn't get any money and Jay Inslee wouldn't get any money. It's a really interesting study. And a couple of different groups that looked at it said, you know, they went in there thinking, oh, come on, who's funding this thing? They said, it's legit. It's legit. Kid has a future. Maybe has a better place to be rather than joining a gang. Maybe they could start to do something. But the idea that this is a public health crisis, Reason looked into it. When the, was it the CDC that said that this is a public health crisis? They started looking into these numbers and the study that was out
gun
there.
Gun violence in America is a public health emergency.
Gun violence is a public health issue.
We need to start thinking of this as a public health crisis.
Republican Congressman Jay Dickey is infamous for a 1996 law prohibiting the CDC from using federal funds to advocate for gun control.
The Dickey Amendment.
The so-called Dickey Amendment.
Remember the Dickey Amendment? Which has effectively kept the CDC from studying gun violence.
What inspired the Dickey Amendment was a blockbuster 1993 CDC-funded study, which claimed to show that owning guns made Americans overwhelmingly less safe.
Having a gun in your home not only doesn't protect you, but it puts your family at risk.
According to a recent film published by the New York Times, the NRA lobbied for the Dickey Amendment because the 1993 study made an overwhelming case against gun ownership, and it wanted to stop the CDC from ever backing studies of this sort again.
The NRA didn't think that that would be good for business, and this really spurred them on to attack us with much greater fury.
The problem with this story is that the 1993 study doesn't actually show what its proponents claim. It had serious statistical problems that stem from its approach to the topic of gun violence, underscoring why the Dickey Amendment was good policy. A public health agency isn't well suited to analyzing social science issues of this sort.
So they went ahead and they took in, looked at the study, and they found out that it was flawed in just every which way imaginable, that the numbers didn't add up and what they were taken from it. And then the CDC saying it's a public health thing, that if you have a gun in the house, you're 10 times more likely or 5 times more likely. The numbers were all manipulated in a way, and they simply said it doesn't hold water. I don't know if it, is the next cut way too long, Jacob, this one? No, this isn't bad. Here's how they were able to sort of fudge those numbers.
Brown points out that unlike with death from disease, when a gun kills someone in a home, the surrounding circumstances are highly relevant.
The researchers count all deaths equal, whether the homeowner or her family or a homicidal home invader. Someone not blinded by disease control thinking would focus on how these guns were used. for self-defense, suicide, accidental injury, domestic violence, or seized by an attacker and used against the owner. This could be useful information for someone weighing the benefits and risks of keeping a gun in the house.
A major flaw in the study is that it attributes homicides to the presence of guns in the home, even if a gun wasn't involved.
In fact, the majority of the homicides don't have a gun at all. And if a gun was involved, the researchers don't bother to ask if it was the homeowner's gun.
Okay, so listen, like you point out, the president of UW saying that they're going to do everything they can to support more research, looking into solving this public health problem.
I mean, when they talk about root causes, those root causes are so deep and so historically problematic. There's nothing that one organization can do. There's nothing that one, person can do. It takes, so much effort to be able to even identify each thing and then go for it. This particular study, though, John, the reason that just to show you how flawed it was, the CDC study, they said the risk was 200% greater that you would be killed if you had a gun in the house. And mm-hmm. you're 400% more likely to kill yourself if there's a gun in the house. And when they drilled down for all the, the statistics and everything, they found that that's more like 25%.
Yeah. Listen, people want to be able to use those numbers any way they possibly can. So it's tragic. It's just going to keep going. And the fact that fentanyl is cheap to buy, easy to distribute, and so many people on the streets of Seattle. We've created a marketplace where we don't enforce that law. So you have people coming in from other states because you know that you can get drugs here. You know you won't be hassled. You know they're cheap. You know where to buy them. You can have a completely degenerate lifestyle where you just live however you want to live, get as high as you want to get high, and then occasionally someone's going to shoot somebody, but the distributors are intact. The business is supported by the fact that it's not being broken up by the police, because the police realize, I'm not going to get in there and try to stop it. So you have customers buying the drugs. You have the salesman selling the drugs. You have no one interrupting the sale. And over and over and over and over again, you've got overdoses on the streets, and you have shootings going on as well. It's happening in Portland, and it's happening in Seattle. It's happening in San Francisco, where we have decided we're going to decriminalize drugs. Well, if you decriminalize drugs, you get all the other stuff that goes with it. So that's what you've got. And it's not a public health problem that needs to be looked into. It's not about guns. Oh, God. It's just it's tragic. It's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get one of these women on there from that group, the Voices of Mothers United, Black mm-hmm. Mothers United. God, it was powerful. Oh, my God. Nobody could speak. When the woman finished her talk, you ever been in a room with 400 people where no one is able, all you can hear is people crying?
Oof.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
That's effective. When they can get people to pay attention like that and be moved like that, and
people stood in line to hug her.
Mm.
Mm. Wow. Awful. Here we go, Bucky's Auto Service Center. They got 16 locations, been around for 52 years. That's the place to take your car. Take it to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Alrighty. Got an invitation. Matt Larkin running for Congress. I'm supposed to be there at, I'm going to make it because the show goes from 6 to 7. Sherry, how can I possibly get there by before 6:30? They help give money.
Know. Well, yeah. We could maybe repeat the...
Oh, pshaw, don't even say that, Sherry.
Okay, all right. Just, trying to troubleshoot here.
Good, nice try, though. That's a crazy idea. Do you see this story about the guy that decided he was going to take advantage of the gun buyback program? I love this. This is from WKTV.
On August 27th, the state attorney general's office held a community gun buyback program at the Utica Police Department. No questions asked, they'd buy from you as many guns as you wanted to surrender.
Nobody thought this through. If you look at the flyer, it is just the gravest thing that Letitia James could have done. Is she literally put a bounty on 3D printed guns. She said, "I will give you extra money if it doesn't have a serial number on it." They made no specifications. They didn't touch on any details. There was no fine print. And that's why I was able to walk out with $21,000.
After seeing people posting on Twitter about using 3D printers to make ghost guns to sell at gun buybacks, a man who identified himself to us as Kem got to work on a $200 3D printer he got for Christmas.
Well, I 3D printed a bunch of lower receivers and frames for different kinds of firearms.
Then he drove 6 hours to Utica.
He says, hey, you're here for the gun buyback? And I said, yeah, I'm here. And he sees the tote. He's like, oh, how many firearms do you have? And I said, 110.
This began an all-day negotiating and haggling session with staff from the state attorney general's office.
And it ended with the guy and a lady from the budget office finally coming around with the 42 gift cards and counting them out in front of me, $21,000 in $500 gift cards.
We asked the state attorney general's office a few weeks ago if they were aware this might be happening at gun buyback programs. They didn't answer the question, responding only that the buyback in Utica helped keep families safe and was a big success.
Oh, I'm sure it was. I'm sure handing over $21,000 in gift cards to some punk kid after getting a bunch of plastic junk was a rousing success.
Kem says he had two objectives: make some cash and make a point.
And gun buybacks are a fantastic way of showing, number one, that your policies don't work, and number two, you're creating perverse demand. You're causing people to show up to these events only to make money, and they don't actually reduce crime whatsoever.
And were the guns made, do you have different color guns too? So it's just the lowered part. So it doesn't have the mechanism at the top that you need, which is the chambering and everything else. So you just had the bottom part of the gun. So you get there's a pistol. He's got the grip on there. He's got the trigger, but not the piece that slides back and forth like on a semi-automatic. So he just had a whole bag of them, took them in there. This is exactly what happened in India when they had too many cobras. Great Britain said, for every cobra that you catch, we'll give you, I don't know what it was, 10 bucks or something like that. So people are like, oh, okay, because they wanted to round up these cobras because they were unsafe for the families. So then what happened?
They got all the cobras, and then there was a cobra shortage?
close. What happened was people started to breed cobras.
Oh, yeah.
And sell cobras. So then you would go to the cobra store, and you'd buy some cobras from the guy, and the guy knew the price, so he kept the price low enough. You'd come in, you'd buy 50 cobras, and then you'd go and turn them in, and then you'd get the money for the cobras. Well, then Great Britain figured, well, this in England or in India, they're like, well, this isn't working. Forget it. We're not doing that anymore. So then all the people that were breeding the cobras and selling the cobras were like, screw you. So they just opened up the cages and let all the cobras out.
Well, that didn't work. I mean, how do you feel about this guy, though? I mean, I get his point, but $21,000, that's a lot of money. Do you at all feel a little bit annoyed with him that he gamed the system a little bit?
No, not at all. Not in the slightest. He proved his point that how absurd the whole thing is. I like it to haggle back and forth with people to eventually get $21,000 in gift cards. Now, I don't know the kind of gift cards I would have given him, in that you think there's something on there, but then there isn't anything on there. But good
for him. You would
have
given them up a little quicker. You're like, all right, here you go.
Yeah, he wouldn't use much haggling. Yeah, I like the fact that he put $200 printer and makes a bunch of guns, goes in there. Just how ridiculous that whole program is. Here's another thing that people try to cheat on. This is a Starbucks barista posted on TikTok, talk about a hack, and customers tried to use it to get a free drink.
So I work at Starbucks, and today somebody ordered a handle bag, which is 5 cents, as you can see here. And then there's like a text box where you can put in requests, and they just said, could I have a grande strawberry cream frapp with no whipped cream? Thank you. So this is not a Starbucks hack. It was a little bit funny, but it didn't work. We just canceled the order.
I didn't understand how it works. So you get the bag for 5 cents, but then you can get a drink?
Well, I think what this person was posting on TikTok was, a hack is something you can do to whatever. So they were trying, she was trying to say, or whoever it was, hey, here's a way to game the system with Starbucks. Buy a bag, but right in there, in the little note part, hi, could I please have a grande strawberry cream frap with no whipped cream and a strawless lid? And then they would think, oh, okay, this is part of her order, make the drink, and she'd get the drink for 5 cents. The Starbucks barista is saying, this is not a hack. We don't buy this. You know, we're just going to throw the order away if we see it written in this little note thing. So it's not okay. A way for you to get away with something. Don't try it.
And then did some other barista go, we can make him a drink anyway.
Who cares? It's not our stuff. We'll do it.
Yeah. That's the waiter. I'm very sorry you had to wait. These desserts are on me. Mm. They're not on you. Right. You went into the back and you cut a couple of pieces of carrot cake and you snuck around the system and then you dropped the cakes down on the table, stealing from the owner of the restaurant so they'd save yourself the tip.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. So don't try it.
Don't. Nope. And then you bite into the carrot cake and there's a plastic gun in there. Oh, that's
card.
Where it is. And a gift card. Oh, my God. Kooky.
Pay for your
it's
meal.
Kooky time. How much should I give Matt Larkin? Because this is, you don't get invited to these things unless you're going to give a big check.
Starbucks Ooh. Gift card, right?
Yeah.
Good
I
idea.
Think, yeah, that
How many
that
gift cards?
That, 500. 21,000.
Just give them in gift cards? Give them in gift cards?
You could, and then he can give them out as like thank yous. So you just keep passing them along. You give him the gift cards. He says thank you for those. And then the next time you see somebody, hey, that was a really nice thing you did for my campaign. Here's a gift card.
No, because what if it comes back to haunt him and then that becomes the October surprise? King Five has found out that Matt Larkin running for Congress has been handing out empty gift cards.
Well, then he would say it was from a campaign donor that he no longer trusts. So he'd throw it back to you that was a member of the media.
Matt Larkin can't be trusted with your money if he's giving out fake Starbucks gift cards.
Yeah, and so then
have
he
one
would
of those
say,
ads.
Yeah, but he would just deny it and say, oh, well, you know, a member of the media that I thought I could trust did this, and I'm deeply, deeply disappointed and ashamed.
Jacob, we got to hold that story and move that forward to the 5 o'clock. We'll put it around the 5:30. Angela, let me know we're back on the air. She's so annoying. Let me know. I'm back on.
Do you want to talk about...
I got in 5, 4, 3, 2, go.
Do you want to talk about being in the newspaper, John?
Oh, yeah. I'm in the newspaper. As a fireman... Or as a person who's filled out the 4 pages in order to become a volunteer fireman. That's practically a fireman.
Aspiring firefighter.
Kevin wrote me and said, could you please write something in the local paper to support the levy for EMS levy? So I wrote a little article. I tried to keep it under 230 words. And I got it all in there. They didn't cut any of it. I was, you know, I'm not great with spelling and punctuation and stuff like that. I normally just dictate right into the phone, which boy, oh boy, that can backfire on you. Cause a lot of words you don't think are curse words, sound like curse words into your thing. And the next thing you know, you're writing some horrible thing to somebody that starts out as just being a nice sort of in a letter to the editor. So I quickly shot it over to Nicole. She took it. Corrected a few things that were not there, and it made it into the paper today. So there we go. Trying to support, make sure everybody knows they should get the levy. Pay for the levy. It's only a couple of cents. It's well worth it if you support the levy and fellow firefighters.
So
that's a brotherhood, Sherry.
I know. I'm just curious, is this going to maybe inspire you to take one small step closer to actually realizing your lifelong dream of being a firefighter now that you've written about it and you've talked about it?
Right. Well, now, and we mentioned this yesterday, there are like six or seven empty lines staring at me, daring me to think of other community awards that I've gotten that might be of help when it comes to determining whether or not I would be a good firefighter. I'm going to put in there recently published.
Yes. That's what
Tribune.
I was thinking.
Yes.
Yeah. So you've recently had a publication about firefighting and EMS. You're a published author now.
Yes. And I don't think there are that. I don't know how many got in there. It just looks like myself and one other person. So,
yeah, but she had a lot to put in there. She had a lot more to say on whatever that topic was.
That other person?
Yeah.
They went way over 230 words. Look, I got kind of squeezed down there at the bottom. Time stood still, but I also knew we were running out of it. Good little letter. What'd you think?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was very well done and very powerful and from the heart, which you do best.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to do. As a firefighter, I'm going to be kind of that guy that I don't see myself in the building anywhere near the heat because of my hair and my teeth. I don't want to damage anything. I see myself as the guy with a person sitting on the edge of it, like on the curb, and I'm putting a blanket over them. Something like that.
So you're more of a fire supporter.
Over their
than
shoulders,
a fighter.
Not over their face, like they're dead. Like it's over their shoulders, like comforting kind of thing.
Right. So the fighter part isn't really going to be your title. You'll be like a fire watcher.
Fire comforter. Comforter.
Fire comforter.
Handing out stickers and changing people's batteries in their fire. What are those things called? The beep, beep.
That seems like maybe something you should know.
Oh, that'd be a smoke detector. But you don't like ladders, so I don't know that that's going to work for you either.
Jump up. I got a vertical leap of 4 inches.